Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Here we are again on Connecting Faith. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem.
I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you. Got Ross at the controls and Carissa's at the phones today, and want to invite you to join in. I hope that today's program will be encouraging and interactive. We have a great guest and an important topic we'll get to in a moment. I do want to mention, though, Ted, that if you want to know what makes your child tick, or maybe just need a little inspiration, you could attend the Hearts at Home conference, the North Central Conference, coming out November 7th.
That's great. Being held in Rochester, Minnesota, I've been to that before. It's wonderful. A lot of great resources there.
Yeah. We have some tickets, and we're doing that, doing a giveaway. In fact, you can sign up for details online at myfaithradio.com. So check that out, the Hearts at Home, the North Central Conference, coming up November 7th and 8th at the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. And myfaithradio.com has details. So what's the old joke? My psychiatrist has finally figured out what makes me tick. He just can't explain why I chime at the top of every hour.
There you go. Okay. I like it.
That's a bad joke.
No, that's all right.
You know, today we're talking about home and children. Today we're going to talk about an area that maybe doesn't get a lot of discussion. We maybe don't know how to talk about it, but there are many who are experiencing some real hurt and pain as we talk today about pregnancy and infant loss. This is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. And in fact, today is actually Baby Loss Awareness Day, which is a part of this whole month emphasis. And we have, over the years, had the opportunity to visit with Cherokee Isles, who has provided such great encouragement and insight in this area. So we wanted to just bring her back today, and we're honored that she could join with us. Cherokee is a bereaved parent herself, an international speaker, author of now 18 books, including Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriages, Stillbirth, Miscarriage, A Shattered Dream, Giving Care, Taking Care, Support for the Helpers, A Couple of Communications After a Baby Dies, and a number of others. She also heads Wintergreen Press and Babies Remembered. And by the way, I would like to just mention before we bring Cherokee onto the program that we do have a number of resources and links on our website. So if you go to myfaithradio.com, even any time during the program, you'll find that there's some good resources and materials there. And we'll make sure we give a couple of other websites too with Cherokee to talk about that. And would like to open up the phone lines right away as well, because this is an opportunity for you to talk and maybe just share a little bit about your story. If there's someone in your family that has experienced a loss like this and you would just like to maybe get some counsel, some advice, we'd welcome your calls at 877-933-2484. Cherokee, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. It's always wonderful to be here with you.
This is a topic that maybe we haven't talked a lot about in general, but I'm wondering how our awareness and response to infant loss has changed since you first began addressing this, which is back 20 some years ago, I think, right?
Oh, yep. I think we're on 33 right
okay.
now. Yeah, it was. I call it the dark ages, the silent period, the sweep it under the rug time of life. And thanks to, you know, work that a lot of us have done, I made it my mission after my son Brennan was born. In a week and a half, he would be 33, stillborn, full term. Saw him for a couple of minutes and didn't get any mementos of any kind. No one in our family saw him. Didn't really have a good funeral for him. Just didn't know. So I wrote the book Empty Arms, as you probably remember, to help people make better choices. So those years back in the early 80s were a year of kind of discovery and change and It was hard. It was hard to get people to talk about it. There was no Awareness Month or Awareness Day like this, and there was no internet, and so people sat at home alone. And thankfully, a lot of work that we did and other organizations and people around the country and the world did, now we have literally thousands of websites of people putting up, you know, chat rooms and Facebook groups and web presence and organizations and hundreds of books now. And so the awareness has certainly grown, and there is support for people. I'm grateful for that. And we even had our first movie on stillbirth called Return to Zero. And we'd been waiting for that for over 30 years. We kept trying to push Hollywood, and it just took someone who had a baby die who wrote and produced, you know, little documentaries and things, and he made a full-length, beautiful film with starring Minnie Driver, and the film and Minnie were up for Emmy Awards. So that was a real shatter the silence kind of experience and time. And yet, there are lots of people who don't know about the resources, who aren't told that there are folks out there who don't get good support, who are told to move on, who are told to have another baby that'll solve everything. And so there's still a lot of room to grow, especially for miscarriage. But nonetheless, all of these losses, there's a fear that people have that if they bring it up, they'll make someone cry, and that it's uncomfortable for them, and they don't say the baby's names out loud. And so we still need to be pushing for awareness and spreading the compassion and love, Neil.
Let's start with that, the fear to bring up the topic, because you know, in shattering the silence, I mean, you said, you know, back 30 years ago, didn't really want to talk about it. We probably still don't want to talk about it today. So how do we overcome that fear to bring it up? And maybe is there a right way and a wrong way to engage in this conversation?
Well, I think there definitely are better ways and wrong ways to do it. I think if people look into their heart and what their intention is, if we examine our intention, is it my intention to protect someone, not to cause them to think about it, to sit on the what I call the planes of life, you know, the not going too deep, not going to, you know, dig in, don't want to bring it up. If they sit there, what they need to realize is they're actually causing more harm to families who feel alone, who feel like they have leprosy or AIDS or, you know, now the Ebola. I mean, like, people don't, they avoid me. They avoid the fact that it's my baby's birthday coming up. I mean, no matter when or how that baby died, whether it's SIDS or stillbirth or neonatal death or a miscarriage or any other kind of, you know, infant loss, what they need to realize is that we're all parents. We'll always be the parent of that child, and we love to hear their name, and we wait for someone to bring it up to us. And if it's a bad moment, we might cry or we might say, oh, not now. But don't be afraid of those tears, because when you love somebody, of course, you're going to have those sad kinds of reactions. But it doesn't mean don't talk about it. It just means I'm feeling right now. And, oh, you know, even though it might be hard, it can be beautiful because we can have a conversation and say that child's name out loud. So if the intention is let's not keep them lonely and let's not pretend that they don't have a child and that they might not, you know, want to sit by themselves, but really they might want to share, then we flip it and we say, okay, well, how can I bring it up in a way that helps them to know I care? And using the I part of what I just said is a critical or maybe that's a better way to do it. I've been thinking about you and Brennan. I know his birthday's coming up sometime. I don't remember the date, but, you know, sometime in November. And do you feel like talking about him? Or is there anything you've been thinking of lately that you might want to share with me? And it's really starting a conversation and allowing that person to say yes or to say, oh, no, not right now, but thank you for thinking of him.
Really kind of a pretty simple and you know, open-ended way, I guess, isn't it? So it doesn't really, it leaves a lot of options there.
Right, so, right. Yeah, or, you know, how are your kids doing since their brother, you know, Benji died? you know, asking a question about life. Have you been getting enough support? I've heard of some resources lately, and I know, I just was thinking about you. Do you get enough support, or could I share some resources with you? You know, it's like being kind, being compassionate, asking, as you say, open-ended questions, and allowing the bereaved to say, you know, I would love to talk with you about that. I'm running out the door. Could we have tea? You know, what about the next few days? It's hard to be the bereaved and say, call up someone and say, oh, I'm really missing my baby right now, or my child, you know, older child, whatever. The loss might be my husband. Do you want to talk? That just does not happen too often. It really takes their family and friends and caring, you know, church community to take the first step sometimes.
Well, perhaps this program could be a first step for some listening that just want to share more of the story. We'd be honored to take your call today at 877-933-2484. Or maybe you have a question about a family member who has struggled and is dealing with this loss. We're talking pregnancy and infant loss today. This is also Baby Loss Awareness Day. And just love to engage you in the conversation. You can join us with your call at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Or you can go to myfaithradio.com and connect that way on email by going to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. You can send us a note if you'd prefer to do that. myfaithradio.com. Cherokee Isles, bereaved mother, became a pioneer in the area of infant loss. She's an international expert, consultant, author, and most importantly, a parents advocate for those who have lost an infant. She's author of now 18 books on the baby loss and death and dying, and spoken to thousands of meetings, support groups, conferences, and seminars, and has appeared on our program on several occasions. We're glad to have her back, and we'll talk more with Cherokee in just a moment. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Past the hour, we are in the middle of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. It happens each October, and today is actually also Baby Loss Awareness Day. And I want to just let you know that we have some great resources available online, and in our conversation today, we'll also talk about some websites that have links to wonderful resources that can be especially encouraging. Cherokee Isle is a pioneer in the area of infant loss and has authored some 18 books now on baby loss and death and dying, and she has had a Babies Remembered and Wintergreen Press. Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage is one of her first books, and well-known. And in fact, I think, Cherokee, you have some copies of some books you can give away today. Is that right?
Yes, I would love to give some Empty Arms books or Couple Communication After a Baby Dies. So.
Good. So when you call, you can just ask, say, I'd like to be in the drawing for one of those resources. We'd be happy to take your call and your question or comment at 877-933-2484. So, Cherokee, I'm just curious, are infant losses less common today or more, or are we just more aware of it today?
Well, we do not see the numbers going down that much, and in fact, maybe they're even going up a little bit because of a reluctance to induce babies who might have some issues, some concerns, a little bit earlier. They're letting babies go all the way to 41 plus weeks, and some of our people who have had stillbirths recently were not really allowed to be induced earlier, and so I think we're going to actually see stillbirths going up a bit. There's some studies that seem to show that. Miscarriage is pretty much similar, and SIDS has gone down, thankfully, because although they didn't have evidence-based studies, they had babies sleeping on their back more, and for whatever reason that still hasn't been quite figured out, that the number has been cut in half. It's still too many, but Yeah, we still have, you know, probably close to a million babies a year when you include miscarriage in the U.S. who die, and that's a lot of families who suffer. And to the point, I wanted to be sure I get this out there, Neil, in terms of honoring and remembering. Today, we ask everyone throughout the world to light some candles at 7 p.m., and if you can imagine being in outer space and watching people have candles lit outside and inside, and then turning on the porch lights, keeping them on for an hour at 7 p.m., that it was just going to roll around the world, these lights being lit. And so whether you've had a baby die or not, if you just want to remember with us and honor them, turn your lights on for an hour from 7 p.m. to 8 tonight.
Sounds great. What a wonderful way to remember. You know, you were talking about kind of what's happening in terms of, you know, there's still way too many families affected. But are hospitals responding to this loss? Are they equipped to support families during this time? I know you've kind of pioneered some work in that area as well.
Yes, that's such an important question. Some are doing a fantastic job no matter who the staff member is that cares for the family. And unfortunately, due to too many things like too much time on the computer, not enough, you know, requirements for computer use for nurses, not enough money put towards, and it doesn't take a lot, but put towards this issue, understaffing, decisions from up high that let go of our perinatal loss coordinators, I actually am concerned that in too many cases we're going backwards. The hospitals have other things that they put as a priority. On one hand, I get that, but on the other hand, we should not be sacrificing giving materials. They're not giving materials to families, or they're going back to just giving some handouts instead of books like Empty Arms, and there's another one like that, When Hello Means Goodbye, that help them make decisions at the time. And so, I see it going backwards throughout this country in too many places. Again, not all. And in fact, to that point, what I have done is start up a certification program for baby loss family advisors. Also, if someone is a doula, they are baby loss doulas, to be called in as soon as possible on the phone, over the internet, or in person to help families make better decisions and get the care that they need and deserve, because sadly, we can't count on the hospitals like we could in the late 80s and early 90s. Things have changed, and I'm very, very sad and frustrated about that. In fact, I have a training coming up on the 24th and 25th in the Minneapolis area. If anyone wants to become a baby loss family advisor, we have 2 days of training and some things outside of that that will help them really learn about how to help families, no matter miscarriage, all the way up through SIDS. So if people want to know about that, they can go to my website, babylossfamilyadvisors.org.
Babylossfamilyadvisors.org, right?
That's right.
All right. And we'll give out a couple other websites and things as we go along as well. By the way, our phone number is 877-933-2484. We're talking about baby loss, about pregnancy and infant loss awareness, and we'd love to have you join the conversation. I want to follow up, Cherokee. You said about needing help to make decisions at the time. Talk about what are the kinds of decisions that we need to, or that families should make at this time, or maybe typically don't make.
Well, imagine that someone is in a car accident. Someone in their child in the back seat maybe dies. They have a child injured in the front seat. The car's upside down. They don't know how they got there. And the EMTs come to the car, and they're pulling mom out, and they say, "Oh, your baby died, and now do you want to go to the hospital? Do you want to see your child again? Do you want us to take some pictures? Should we call a funeral home? Is there somebody we can call to help you?" On and on and on. And they're in the middle of chaos and craziness and shock, and they don't even know what these questions are, which is why when they do get to the hospital after a baby's died, or if the baby dies during labor, or if they're doing an induction for a miscarried baby, or, you know, whatever the case might be, the baby's died of SIDS and they were in a traumatic situation with the police at their door, and now they're at the emergency room, anything that's talked about at that time is going to go in and out. So we need to be aware that whoever's working with them, staff, whatever, need to slow it down, give them something in writing to help them make these decisions, because they're very important decisions. Decisions like spending time with the baby. In some cases, this may be how they meet their baby. They maybe didn't have the baby at home for a while. And so opening the eyes and bathing the child and being the parent of this loved baby who happens to have died but is still loved, inviting family in to meet the baby, taking gobs and gobs of pictures so that they will have those to remember later, getting footprints and handprints and, you know, really making mountains out of those few moments that they have, as one of the nurses at United used to tell me. Involving their children, getting the children to see the baby and hold the baby, which is an amazing thing that happens throughout a lot of hospitals. And even knowing that in some places, most states like Minnesota, they could have their baby in their home for a while if they can find a funeral director who will work with them, or if the hospital. We have a law in Minnesota that allows people to do that. Sadly, most hospitals in the metro area choose not to let them have that personal right, and I'm heartbroken about that, but I'm banging the drum, because having the baby at home for a little while where people can come in that safe environment where they can put the, you know, to meet the baby, or they can rock their child for a while in the baby's room, or just, you know, sleep with the baby for an hour or two. Not long, but just enough that they get to really have private time instead of just in the hospital. So there's a lot that families can do to be the active parent of their child before they then make the goodbye decisions and cremate or bury their child.
Are these principles the same if it's a miscarriage as opposed to a full-term birth?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Because you were talking about saying the child's name out loud, and thinking, well, I wonder if there are many parents that maybe haven't even gotten to that point yet of picking a name or determining one. So
yeah,
that becomes
good point. Good point, Neil. No one has to do that. And when they're 20 weeks or more in most states, and that's true in Minnesota, they need to take care of their baby's remains, bury, cremate. Prior to that, they don't need to, but they should be told. The law in our state says they should be told they can. They can bury or cremate the remains. They can also let the hospital take care of it, but of course they'd want to know what the hospital does. And they don't have to name that child. Over 20 weeks, it's more likely because there's a death certificate involved. But here's the thing. If they want support, if they saw it as a baby, if they choose to name the child, even some names are really kind of cute, like one mom did JLB, Jeremy's little brother. And so that's what they name the miscarried baby. Others might just call him Sweet Pea or Peanut, or actually give them a name, a neutral name if they don't know boy or girl. But when you give a child a name, you say to the world and to your family, he matters, she matters, I want you to remember them. If we don't give a name, it's a little harder. Was that an event? Was that a medical emergency? Was that a child? So it's really up to the family. There's no pressure. But I invite people to name their miscarried baby. We named, well, actually I did. My husband agreed, and I agreed to disagree. I named the first baby Marama. That was a name I had picked out, even though it was about a 12-week miscarriage. But I didn't name her until after Brennan was born, a year and a half later. And so it doesn't matter. We can do it at the time or later or not at all.
Good insight, as always, from Cherokee Isle, who's an international bereavement educator and speaker and author of Empty Arms. You can find out more on her website, babiesremembered.org. And we invite you to join our conversation as well. Our phone number is 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. We do have some copies of Cherokee's books to give away, and we'll do that here at the end of the show. Love to have you join in with your comment or question. 877-933-2484.
I will carry you while your heart beats here.
It's 32 past the hour. Happy to welcome back Cherokee Isle to our broadcast today. Cherokee is an international bereavement educator and speaker. He's authored some 18 books now. Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and
Infant Death.
There we go. Yes, I can't read my
close
own
enough,
handwriting.
Neil.
So, yes, I haven't read. Been reading my notes. I do want to mention, too, that babiesremember.org is a website. And one of the things I want to talk about is you just kind of alluded to the fact that you decided to name your baby. Your husband, you know, had a different view. I'm wondering if you can talk about how maybe family members or how relationships with spouses, family, and friends are impacted, and maybe some advice for those of us that are closely related or involved.
Sure. Well, let's start with partners and spouses. You know, often people grieve and cope according to their personality and the way they've grown up, their family beliefs. So chances are that couples coming together don't have the same background, don't have the same beliefs. Often boys are taught not to cry, not to show emotion, except anger. Anger is acceptable in many families. And women are often the ones who sit in the puddle and wallow, which I think is a good thing, by the way, but not everybody views it that way. And that can flip, but I'm just going to go with that stereotype for a minute just to kind of put the two next to each other and say that if one doesn't want to talk about it because it's painful and it causes their partner to cry, and the other one needs to cry because it makes them feel good, we can get on different wavelengths. And that certainly is true even with the family who's trying to help. What I think people need to realize is that for those that are, you know, deeply emotional externally, they are not looking to be fixed. You cannot, and even if they were, you cannot fix someone. So words of advice that try to fix it, so going back to that intention, those words are not usually helpful. What one gentleman told me is that he realized that if he would have quit trying to fix it and would have said the things that I talk about in my books, like saying, uh-huh, oh, no, that's bad. Tell me more. Oh, my, I'm so sorry. I'm sad about that. Yeah, I can imagine. Gee, I have some of those feelings myself. That sort of a good listener, you know, parroting back a little bit, when someone is emoting and sharing their thoughts, is very affirming to that person, and that's really what they need, not someone trying to go to Home Depot and trying to find the right tool, like, you know, like a lot of men do, to see if they can fix this. It can't be fixed, but what can help people is to know they're not alone in the puddle of grief and pain, that others care, that they can tell their stories and people will listen, that people will share resources, that people will affirm and say, it's okay, you know, you have the right to feel that way. You loved your baby, and you will always miss them, and you will always be the mommy. You will always be the daddy. You know, it's really basic sorts of things. It's not like stretching out there to try to find, you know, the world's greatest answer. And for those of us who believe in God, to say, you know, I know that you're angry with God, because that's a very common response, but God can handle it. And, you know, his son died too, and it, you know, there might be quite a lot of mutual understanding here if you can go to God and share your anger, but also share your pain, and ask for the comfort that we so need. I did not have a really close relationship with God prior to this. I said my prayers, and you know, I had some faith, but I realized, my husband and I both realized, that if we were going to make it through, this was so much bigger than us that we had to go to our Lord, and so we did, and even in the subsequent pregnancy, I prayed every day. And now I have my first grandbaby on the way, and I know the things that can happen. And they've already had a early miscarriage, and so I pray daily for you know, comfort and wisdom, and for a healthy baby. And it isn't it is out of our control and in God's hands. And so I think the gift that came from Marama and Brennan, and then we had another baby, and David didn't see that little ectopic pregnancy quite as a baby yet and couldn't quite get to the name idea, but I named her Brenna. And when I meet them in heaven, I guess if they really have another name, they will inform me, and I'll be okay with that, and hopefully they'll forgive me. But, you know, I am grateful to them because some of the gifts that I have gained here is more understanding, so I can now help my friends who have losses, and becoming closer to God and feeling like He just guides me. Whenever I go and do a talk at hospitals or conferences, or I speak at a support group, I always pray for the exact words that I need and to help the people that need to be helped in the room. And inevitably, they come up and tell me things like, how did you know that my dad said that and that I needed this? And I'm like, I didn't. God put that upon my heart. So I feel that I'm doing God's work, and it is just a beautiful and awesome, incredible thing.
Now, speaking of doing God's work, I know that there are ways that churches can be more supportive and encouraging. And I know you have on your website a sample church bulletin about Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. May you say a word about that before we get to our calls?
Yes. I would love when people go to babiesremembered.org to go to the Take Action place. There's on the navigation, and then awareness. And so when you go to awareness, I have a sample church or synagogue bulletin or something to put in the newsletter, and I tell them how it's October, you know, Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and that parents paid the highest price when their child died too soon, and here are a few things you can do. And I give them really specific ideas, and I would love to see these in Sunday's bulletin so that family, friends, and the church community can know that what people want is to have your understanding and compassion. People need to hear their baby's name out loud, ask about their story, and then listen. Don't try to make it better. Pray for their healing. Offer to shop for them. Bring them a meal even months later when everybody else has quit and they're gone. Be sensitive around their due date and the baby's death and birth dates and holidays and anniversaries. And remember that fathers and grandfathers hurt and have needs too. Recognize that their children are also impacted and need gentle conversation and resources. And be honest and show that you care. I even give an example of what to say, like, I've been thinking of your sweet William lately or your sweet Emily lately. Do you feel like talking about her now? I'd love to see her pictures and learn more about your dreams, about what happened, and to hear about how you're doing as a family. So if we could put something like this sample into everybody's church bulletins, either during October or, you know what, doesn't matter when, and I think we would build a much better, compassionate, understanding community.
Babiesremembered.org, and then the Take Action, and you'll find it there. Let's take a phone call or two. Monica is on line one. Monica, you're on with Cherokee Ann. Go ahead with your question.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. And while I've been listening, I've been praying for wisdom on how to ask my question. I'm not the woman who lost the baby. I am the aunt. So my niece lost a baby about 10 years ago. And just to give you a very brief history, the baby was very ill. So from the time Joshua was born, he had to have constant care. My niece was 18 years old when she lost the baby. She was very young. She was a single mom. She was 18 years old when she had him. He lived to be 10 months old. He had lots of surgeries, and she took care of him at home. My sister is her mother, and it's been 10 years, and I'm trying not to sound disrespectful, but at times it feels like they are constantly mourning the death of Joshua. It's constant. You know, they have set up like little altar places, and we're all Christians. They set up altar places, you know, in their homes, and I have a new grandson now, and whenever I talk about my grandson, you know, they start to cry, and oh, they bring up Joshua, and you know, I honor them. I try to honor them by sending cards on his birthday and on his, you know, date of death, and you know, when he passed. And I ask, you know, as often as I feel like I want to, but I will share with you that every time I do, it's a sad, sad time, and it brings on depression, and it almost feels like to some of us in the family that they have kind of taken this on and become victims of it.
And, Monica, let me just jump in so we can get to. I want to give Cherokee a chance to respond, but certainly a very important question, and I think there's probably a lot of people that can relate or are wondering about that very same thing. Cherokee, what advice would you give? This is a pretty difficult situation.
It's always hard because everyone is unique. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would, first of all, say how kind of you to be sending cards and to bring it up, even though you know it's hard for them. Clearly, that is a need they have. If you think about their personality before the loss, it might be interesting, and you know, we don't want to go into that here, but it might be interesting to look at how people cope in life. If they dwell on things, if they tend to be a little bit more glasses half empty rather than full, they take on those sort of tendencies when they have a loss also. And I'm sure people have probably mentioned counseling, and I think we all can benefit from counseling, so I don't know that we have to wait until it goes on and on like that. But I think the things for all of us to look at with our family is, are they working? Are they surviving? Are they eating? You know, is their life at least, are they living their life, or have they gone into the cave and others have to bring them everything and they don't have any money? And, you know, but if they're functioning and this is the way they function, I'm not sure anything you say or do is going to change them. And so keep loving them and keep being understanding and recognize that may be just their way of dealing with it. If they choose to get counseling, they may learn some ways to move out of that while they can still honor and love their baby. Someone I know was told something wise by a kind of a counselor person, and they said, "Well, so what will you do? What could you do differently and for others, or to kind of move further into life here, not to forget it, if you weren't crying and sad all the time when you think about your baby? Are there other things that you could do? Because you will always be the parent, and you can remember them in other ways and honor them in other ways besides just being sad and, you know, being down." And however that person said it, which is better than the way I just said it, it really freed her up to say, "Oh my gosh, I never thought about that. I can smile and still love my baby. I can do something for others and still love my baby. I'm going to change." And so she chose to change. Here's the deal. People have to choose to change. We can't force them. So I would say, you know, continue to pray, to be supportive, to ask the family not to put a lot of pressure on them, to offer resources, you know, maybe even share some things you heard today. But in the end, they are the ones that will have to decide how they handle this.
Thanks, Cherokee. It's a good word. And Monica, thank you for your question and for your sensitivity to your sister's family situation there. And we're glad to have you call. We do. Again, we'll be doing a drawing for some of Cherokee's books here at the end of the broadcast. And also, I want to just point you to her website, babiesremembered.org. You can find some resources there, as well as on our website at myfaithradio.com. We've added some links and resources, a number of pieces of content there today, so you can check that out on our website. We'll get to more calls and comments and questions coming up in just a moment with Cherokee Isles. We're glad to have connected with her. She serves as international speaker and author of 18 books. Her first book, Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Neonatal Death, was inspired as she and her husband went through loss. And this is October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and today is also Baby Loss Awareness Day. And we're taking this day to reflect on that, and we'd love to have you join the conversation. at 877-933-2484. Stay tuned. We're at 12 minutes before the hour, and talking today with Cherokee Isles. Cherokee is a bereaved mother who has become a pioneer in the area of infant loss, an international expert, a consultant, author, and most importantly, a parent's advocate for those who have lost an infant, author of some 18 books, including Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Neonatal Death. We do have some copies of that we'll be drawing for today at 877-933-2484. October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and I'm talking about maybe things that we can say and do or not say or not do as we relate to those that are experiencing loss and the grief that goes along with that. And Mark has a question, listening in on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls. Mark, you're on Cherokee. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a workmate that through the winter here, they had a miscarriage, and I believe through the world system as it is now, I feel he's been in denial with the abortions and right to life and all this stuff. He's in the denial. It's just a boop, you know. How can I bring Christ into a conversation through this tragedy that they've, you know, gone through?
So if I hear you right, you're saying that they had a miscarriage and yet he has a different beliefs about life. Have you spoken with him at all about the miscarriage, and do you get a sense if he sees it as the loss of their baby?
They know it's a life, but it's like it's nothing. You know that they've gone through this. I don't see no real signs of remorse or anything.
Well, what you see and what is may be totally different. And I'm going to say, especially with men who don't want to admit how hard something might hit, or maybe it hits him later when he realizes maybe he has another child and sees an ultrasound at a similar gestation or something, or it's possible there's maybe 25% or so of people who have a miscarriage who really see it as not a baby just yet. And, so I don't want to put upon him, I don't want to make a decision about how we think he should feel. But if you use I statements and you're in a kind of a private moment with him, you know, where maybe not at work, maybe some other time, or you send a note and just share your thoughts. Because I don't know that we can force anyone in a direction. It's through love and guidance and, you know, connecting with them that things can change. So maybe a note or a little comment that I've been praying for your baby. Did you decide to name your baby or not? Did you see it as a baby? Maybe that's the first question. I love the book Heaven is for Real. In that book, I don't know if people know about this, but there's the little boy meets his baby sister who was miscarried, and yet he never knew they had a miscarriage. And so, you know, who knows, maybe even sharing that book with them and just saying, I have faith and hope and believe that someday you'll meet your baby again. I don't know how you feel about it, but I just want you to know that I think about you a lot and I pray for your baby. And that is a gentle way of offering an opportunity for a conversation. It may not do anything right now, but it'll be there. It'll be there sitting in his heart. And if and when a time comes that it moves him, then it will. But I wouldn't do anything pushy. That can be really, in my opinion, can push people away.
Do you find that husbands, I guess that's probably the case. Everybody grieves differently, but husbands maybe react in this area particularly different than maybe the wife and mother would?
Well, you know, it depends. I have met so many men that just did it so privately, in the shower, on the way to and from work, you know, in their own little journal if they kept one, or with one buddy, or with just with God. But they were trying to be upbeat and positive for their partner. They didn't want, like one dad said, you know, the nurse was crying, my wife was crying. I decided, I said to myself, cry, darn it, why can't you cry? And I couldn't, and I was trying to be supportive. It's really hard to be supportive and to be in the doing place and also the feeling place. So I think there's a lot of men that this is on their heart and heavy, but they don't quite know how to share more openly and emotionally. In fact, many men have told me, especially if I bring it up in this way, that yes, indeed, they could not do their own grief work until they knew their partner was going to be okay. And for some, that was a year later or more. One daddy, it was 7 years later. The wife admitted that he's changed. He's starting to grieve, and I don't know what's going on. And I said, well, how are you doing? Oh, I'm finally feeling better. It's been 7 years, and I'm finally getting my act together. And I said, well, there you have it. Let me explain what could be going on. So, yes, but then the other thing to remember is that women feel it in their body and experience the changes 24/7. And for dads, it's a little harder. It's external. It's a theory. It may not be real until they see the ultrasound or they see that baby. And so, there can be some differences. We just have to be careful not to judge, because what we see is not necessarily what is.
Words of advice, and we sort of touched on it, but dealing with brothers and sisters, siblings, how could we maybe as parents make sure that our other children are aware and included in this grieving process and understanding?
Oh, Neil, that is such a good question. I just read a book called Extraordinary Comfort, written by a man named David Assay, A-S-A-Y, and he did not learn that he had a sibling until he was an adult, I think maybe in his 50s, when his mother was, what they thought was dying, went to heaven, came back, and they thought she was to be dead within hours. And in fact, she rallied and she was fine and lived for another period of time, weeks or a month or something. And she said, oh, I met Sean. Who is Sean? Well, Sean was your brother who was stillborn. And they never knew. And he felt kind of cheated. People I talk with feel like they're cheated by not knowing what's going on. And parents tend to protect their children. And if we protect them by holding their hand when they walk across the street for all their life, do they really learn to walk across the street and look for traffic themselves? We need to teach our children about death. This is the time, and there are so many beautiful and wonderful ways to do it. I give a lot of information on that to parents on my babiesremember.org site, and I have some in Empty Arms, and I have a little sibling grief book that they can get in our e-shop. But basically, if we just will be honest with the kids and work at their level of awareness, include them, they will be grateful later on. And we are teaching them about a very important thing, which is death, rather than letting them learn at a tougher time, maybe when the parent dies and they don't know how to deal with it. So saying things to their children like, saying the baby has died. You know, remember when our fish died and we buried him in the backyard? Remember when our dog died and we brought him to the vet and we said prayers and we buried him in the pet cemetery or in our yard? Well, at this moment, I'm sad to tell you that our baby has died, and we will be crying and we will be doing things to honor him, and I would love for you to see him and hold him and hold her for a little while, and what questions do you have, sweetie? And you know, really just be natural and normal about it as much as we can, and get some guidance about other things to say, but don't protect them. It causes them to imagine. They know something has happened in the family, and they imagine the worst. They might even think they did it because they had a moment where they said, I don't want another baby, which is a common thing for children to say. So, yes, we could do a whole program on that. Maybe we should sometime,
yeah,
Neil.
That's a good idea, and we have just a minute or so left. I want to maybe give you an opportunity to just talk again about the Baby Loss Awareness Day and opportunity at 7 o'clock tonight to light some candles and then just say a word about the resources available at babiesremember.org.
Yes, thank you, Neil. I was thinking about, and I'd like to invite everybody, in honor of these babies, being October 15th, Baby Loss Awareness Day, to light a candle, turn on your porch light at 7 o'clock, to invite someone that you think doesn't know much about infant loss to listen to this video or audio on, to go to Faith Radio and listen to the audio once it's up there. Get one or two more people to do that and then ask them to do the same. Let's spread the word and teach our community about what they can do. Let's send a note. Maybe you could send a note or make a phone call to someone who's had a baby die, no matter how, no matter when, and just say, I've been thinking about you, and say that child's name out loud if there is a name. If you go to babiesremembered.org, you will find lots of things for parents, for family and friends. At the top, the navigation will guide you, and you can learn a lot on our site. The eShop has our materials. We'd be happy to share those with you. And then if you know anyone that might like to learn more and be a support to someone, we have that upcoming training. It's not too late to sign up at babylossfamilyadvisors.org. Or email me. My email is everywhere, just my name at yahoo.com, and I would welcome my full name, Cherokee, I-L-S-E, at yahoo.com. I would welcome your comments, your questions, and your help if you can help others.
Cherokee Isles, international bereavement educator, speaker, and author of Empty Arms, joining us today on Connecting Faith.